Death Spiral, the only anime podcast with the largest roster of classic prog rock inspired anime girls and no in-app purchases for your first 10 pulls.
Gotta get in while those deals are good, folks. These deals aren't gonna last forever.
Visit animedeathspiral.com to download now or scan this QR code.
Oh, hey, you shouldn't put out that QR code. We haven't got that approved yet.
I cannot believe how many times I've had this fucking QR code conversation now where I keep telling people, like, I know it's impossible now to get around them, but like QR codes suck so bad.
Oh, I hate QR codes.
It's insane that we are asked to just completely total gullible rubes, just like without any questions, just like, hey, here, just put this fucking thing into your phone.
You know, at risk of going full like open mic night comedian.
Oh God.
QR code menus. They suck. I know that's like such a fucking whatever thing to complain about. But I think everybody agrees, right? That QR code menus suck and they're the worst.
What's the deal with QR code menus?
Listen, okay, what did Gordon Ramsay always say? We eat with our eyes first. How am I supposed to pick something off of the menu if it doesn't have a little picture of what the food looks like next to it? And yes, I hold that standard for all restaurants, even nice ones.
Well, you know, we used to put our finger up when we wanted the waiter. Now we have to text him if we want the bill. Am I right?
A guy brought me a glass of iced tea. He gave me the little touchpad to ask for a tip. Tips, people, right? Tips? That's controversial.
You like to like and a subscribe. Am I right? Am I right, people?
I think he's right.
So what gotcha games are you playing now?
Oh, you know, I'm getting into Nikkei Mobile. Gotta get up.
I will not compromise on this. It is Nike. They literally call it Goddess of Victory. The Goddess of Victory is Nike.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kawaii and Ugu, so it's pronounced Nikkei.
Fine. You know what's weird about that one? Does that one even have a theme? You know how most of them are themed, like, you know, Azure Lane is like ships or whatever?
Sure. Girls Front Line is sexy guns.
Yeah. Well, child soldiers.
Yeah.
I guess they're all child soldiers.
They're all child soldiers. Come on. Horse girls. Obviously, Uma Musume.
Yeah.
That's number one on the list.
Uma Musume horses. Mm-hmm.
Horses are child soldiers, basically, right?
Yeah, obviously, all the Fate Stay Night ones are historical figures.
Mm-hmm.
Guardian Tales, that one is all, like, sexy anime girl, grim fairy tales.
Oh, what's, speaking of grim fairy tales, what's the Disney Prince one?
This Twisted Wonderland.
Twisted Wonderland, yeah. Wonderland. We talked about that a while ago.
I think
ago.
That's what it's called. Twisted Wonderland?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure.
I played that one for a little while.
Did they announce an anime for that one? Am I dreaming that? Did I make that up?
I think there is. I'm pretty sure there is.
That's wild that in this day and age we finally crossed the barrier where Disney is just full on moving into sexy gacha games. They've been edging the skirts of it for years now, since they popped up, saying, how can we get in on that? Because they tried to do the Toontown one. This didn't cross your radar, but there was one.
No,
that
I
was
hate
like a
Toontown.
Well, it wasn't Toontown, the little kid MMO from, you know, back in the early 2000s, but
oh, I mean the Disneyland land. Disneyland,
yeah,
land.
It's no longer there. Now it's Pixar World.
Oh, good. That's great. I'm glad. They should have bulldozed it years ago.
But they tried to do their own gacha game where you pulled like toon characters, and that fizzled out almost right away, as you can imagine. And so now I think they've just given up and they're like, all right, bug it. Sexy anime boys.
Yeah.
This is our business now.
It was inevitable.
Ever since Kingdom Hearts, it's been inevitable.
Twisted Wonderland it's direct in the Kingdom Hearts lineage. You know,
mm-hmm.
This is also, I mean, this is a way to enter the entire market, too, because I think this is the first, I don't know, how would you get first party Disney anime? So they're like fully doing, they've broken into the anime space, backdooring from this gacha game.
That is so, that sends chills down my spine.
Yeah, it should. It should scare you.
I mean, okay, so Disney has been getting into the anime distribution scene for a couple of years now since they started airing, you know, original anime direct to Hulu, right? That was the entry
point. And Disney Plus. Disney Plus has anime too now.
Well, they started on Hulu and then Disney acquired it. And so everything that's available on Hulu is also basically on Disney Plus. I think they share an anime library at least, but yeah. Disney Plus and Hulu get their own exclusive premiere rights to like original anime now.
Bone chilling.
And now they've gone full in on production. They saw the relationship between Adult Swim, Cartoon Network, Viacom, Warner Brothers, and their anime production like projects that they've been doing. Like Lazarus this season, right? And they're like, yes, we're going to get in on that in the most like exploitative and gross way possible, which is licensing out the image of our classic characters to be turned into sexy anime boys.
Okay, well, I will say you didn't actually play it, but there is a lot of abstraction layers within Twisted Wonderland. If they took off some of the branding, it would take you a while to realize the connection to classic Disney films.
It already got me kind of like that, because when I first saw posters for Twisted Wonderland, by the way, I was first made aware of Twisted Wonderland when I saw the posters for it at Tokyo Disney when I was there a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've been laying the seeds for a while. I was at first under the impression that each individual, you know, character was just a, you know, a Bishonen version of a classic character, but the layers of abstraction you're talking about is more, they're doing the Harry Potter thing, which is there's different school houses and each house is just kind of vaguely themed off of visual aesthetics that are associated with these classic characters.
Well, yeah, they each have their own emblem and stuff.
Yeah.
It's hokey as hell.
Yeah, it's real weird. It's going to make so much fucking money. It's going to make so much money.
Well, it's got pretty stiff competition. I mean, I don't know if you've taken a look at the space, but we've got Wuthering Waves has just come out, and that's doing really well. Apparently, Wuthering Waves has actual gameplay, which is really blowing my mind.
Wow.
I don't know if you've played any of these games.
Oh, no, I only look at pictures of the waifus online.
Yeah, well, that's what most people do. I mean, come on, like... Before Genshin, how many of these gacha games were actually being played and not just being consumed through, let's say, risque fan art?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I've had this thought before.
It's very interesting.
I've had this thought that for obvious reasons, the algorithm on Reddit has decided to basically make my front page entirely advertisements for these gacha games and or links to the dedicated subreddits for these gacha games. It feels like a lot of the community is just like, oh, hey, here's another disembodied anime girl that dropped this week. Hey, new anime girl drop. Like, yes, they're associated with the game, but I would say a majority of the fans of these gacha games, they don't even engage with the actual gacha part of it. They just look for the anime waifu drops, right?
I mean, yeah, that's the poll.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's a weird headspace to just like, hey, new girl design dropped. Hey, they released a new girl this week. We haven't seen this type of girl yet.
Well, you have, because they actually do all look the same. They just have slightly different accoutrement.
Yeah.
This one has a crown. This one's bikini is pink.
This one has a blue dress. I mean, they're all in bikinis. That's not a strong descriptor.
Variously strange designed bikinis. You know what I think is very funny is, you know, obviously gacha as its thing has like evolved so many various limbs. But my favorite one is every gacha game has something called a pity system. Are you familiar with this?
No.
This is something that they... kind of distinguishes itself away from just playing slots. It's a system that means, and this is the brilliance of gacha too. A pity system is the system that guarantees you some kind of level of valuable drop at some point, because they know, like an actual randomized drop system will make people so incredibly angry that they'll just destroy their phone rather than play it. So every modern gacha game just has a system that comes in and goes, you pathetic loser, here you go, here's something to just keep you going a little while longer. And it is officially called a pity system too, which I think is fucking great.
Well, yeah. It's like the free drinks that the waitresses bring out in Las Vegas casinos, right? Their incentive to keep you there and liquored up and gambling.
Here's your pity anime girl.
If you're just losing money, at least you get free drinks, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, I lost $500, but at least I got two free margaritas.
I'm just, you know, it's interesting that they have gameplay now. I find that strange.
Well, I think that Girls Frontline probably is the most on the nose about what they're doing, because that gameplay is literally you pick a, from my understanding, you pick a card roster of sexy gun girls, and then, you know, you send them out into battle and they just kind of like passively do random run number rolls. And so there's no real gameplay, but it gives you an animation of like them crouching and firing their guns, and it makes their jiggly parts of their body jiggle every time the gun fires.
Yeah.
And it's always framed like from the back and over the shoulder, so you're always getting like these weird side views that perfectly frame their side tits and their butts. So, yeah, I think that that one is probably, you know, the most honest with what they want this gameplay to be, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, have you seen screenshots of the gameplay of Goddess of Victory, Nikkei?
No.
Have you seen Nikkei screenshots? So it's like, it's sort of like a shooter with a cover system, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when girls who are just wearing mini skirts go into the cover system crouch, you can imagine what it'll look like.
Yeah, right? Right?
With a low camera. And that's most of the game. It's very funny. And then, you know, all the requisite jiggling, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most evil one, though, is obviously the solo leveling one. Because solo leveling is awful.
It's evil by itself.
It's truly evil.
Even if we were the type of people who loved these gacha games, and we are, make no mistake.
Oh, I can't wait to play Wuthering Waves.
Yeah. The solo leveling gacha game is fruit of the poison tree. Its source material is just disgusting.
It's awful.
It's awful.
It's truly disgusting. You know, I will admit, I did play quite a lot of Genshin Impact when it came out, because that game basically just ripped off all the mechanics from Breath of the Wild. Like, it's basically just a Breath of the Wild game with anime characters.
Yeah, it's something I've heard from multiple people saying, that it's essentially a Breath of the Wild.
It's a JRPG Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, the idea is that you do quests and then you get to pull a new anime gacha girl, right? And they have different passive and different attack animations.
Well, they are fairly distinct, and also that one does have anime boys, so you know, you mix it up a little bit.
Okay.
And there are like dungeons, and you equip a party of three, and in like some other games you get to switch between the three that you've selected in dungeons whenever you want, so that you can use their varied abilities to, like, you know, do the classic like elemental matchups and all that kind of stuff. And they have like unique traversal abilities and things. So there's like a fair amount of stuff going on in that game. Mm-hmm. That kind of sets it apart from some of these other ones. But at the end of the day,
What's the other one? Zenless Zone Zero. Have you played that one?
That's one of the newer ones. I skipped that. It did not look fun to me.
That is the one that I see most aggressively pushed towards me in terms of the fans being horny on main for everything that comes out about it.
Yes. Well, that one has like full ass, you know, AAA cutscenes and stuff. Like, they really went incredibly hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you, at first blush, you could mistake it for an actual video game.
Please, people, be careful. do not mistake these for actual games. They are, in fact, life-draining systems. Digital vampires.
You know what's weird, too, is, like, there's a thing in Zenless Zone Zero that is just copying the panty and stocking art, which I thought was very strange.
I guess it's not that strange, because panty and stocking kicks ass, and it's fun to look at.
It does, and it's coming back soon.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, hey. I guess we should use that to transition back into anime.
Yeah, let's talk about some anime.
I mean, all these gacha games are anime. Make no mistake, they are all the worst parts of anime kind of collected up in one little bundle. But
yeah, I think they're pretty emblematic of all the stuff that we say is wrong with the genre and, you know, just the ecosystem these days, kind of distilled into one kind of super cancer upon the industry.
Gacha games is the climate change of anime.
We all saw it coming 20 years ago and we did nothing.
Yeah, we all know what's happening, but nobody's doing anything about it.
Al Gore was up there in front of the Supreme Court talking about the importance of watching out for gacha games, and we all laughed and called him crazy.
And in his day, it was still the physical, actual gachapon machines.
Remember that filibuster where Al Gore just spent 7 hours in front of Congress pulling gacha balls?
And he had all 1 to 2 star drops to prove his point.
Okay, Jesus. All right, I watched some anime. I want to talk about some of this anime that I watched.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's watch. I watched some anime too. We could talk about some anime. There's some anime going on. We still got a few shows left in this season we haven't covered yet. The season continues.
The season of the witch.
The season of the witch.
As it were. Because I've got some more witch anime that I want to talk about.
Perfect. I was gonna watch Meibashi Witches, but I didn't get around to it, unfortunately.
Okay, I did not get around to that one yet.
Yeah, we'll have one more witch to go, maybe next episode.
Yeah, I did watch Anne Shirley.
And she's a witch.
Yeah, no, she is a witch.
She's definitely a witch.
Yeah, she's an orphan witch. Being an orphan is a type of witch that's established. They, in fact, use the word bewitched and enchanted and cast a spell on you. These are all bits of dialogue that appear in works of fiction throughout history, specifically this one, this episode, this first episode of Anne Shirley of Green Gables.
Anne Shirley.
Okay, so I think I've mentioned before when we were talking about this season's lineup, I have no background with Anne of Green Gables, the book, or the Hallmark 1970s miniseries.
Yeah, you're not interested in books about girls.
Yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't put it like that because that makes me look bad, but yeah, basically that.
How many Judy Blume books can you name right now?
that one about the period? I don't know.
Come on. Come on, you can name one. Come on, one. Name one.
What was
Judy
it? Dear
Blue
God,
book.
Is it? It's Me, Margaret. Is that what it
yes,
was called?
Yes, you're so close. Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Yeah.
Are yes, you there? That is one. Yes.
Turns out he wasn't there.
He was not. No. Oh boy.
So I had to do some research because this is not the first adaptation of Anne of Green Gables that has been an anime.
Nope.
In fact, there's been lots of anime adaptations of specifically Anne of Green Gables, the 1908 book about a little orphan girl.
They really like Anne of Green Gables over there. And it's kind of the touchstone. It's sort of the Rosetta Stone of the pastoral European life obsession in anime.
Yeah. Well, which is funny because Anne of Green Gables takes place on Prince Edward Island in Canada. So it's not really European pastoral. It is bucolic Canadian, but, you know, still close enough.
Yes, but Canada does not have an anime identity.
No. thank God.
How many times has Canada come up in the anime you've watched?
Well, that I find it interesting because Canada hasn't come up more often. Because in my research, I found out that the reason Anne of Green Gables is so, like, beloved in Japan
yeah.
is because it was, like, one of the very first books that was part of the national required reading list when their public school system got implemented in the, you know, early 20th century.
It was Anne of Green Gables and Osamu Dazai's No Longer Human.
Yep. Great back-to-back lesson, by the way.
You should really double feature those books if you really want a good time.
So Anne of Green Gables was like required reading for every Japanese student that went to public school for like 65 years or something.
Yeah, like how we all had to read The Great Gatsby.
Imagine if there was like a gritty like 2010s adult cartoon adaptation of The Great Gatsby. Instead, we got the Baz Luhrmann musical.
They should do a Great Gatsby anime. I'd be down for that. Oh, wait, they did. It was called Genkotsuo, The Count of Monte Cristo.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. You'd think that would be based on The Count of Monte Cristo, but no, it's actually Great Gatsby.
It's a weird switch up, but it works in context of the show.
It works.
You just
great.
Gotta watch it. Yeah,
the green light. Remember the green light.
The green light that he sees from across the ocean of his cliffside prison cell.
Yeah, had to write an essay about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Anne Shirley also was the subject of one of I almost said Shigeru Miyamoto. You know, famous Studio Ghibli creator and animator Shigeru Miyamoto,
the Zelda anime guy.
Yeah, the Zelda guy. And they both worked on the Anne of Green Gables 1970s anime, which was basically where Miyazaki cut his teeth and got hired for the job to do Lupin the Third from. He was working on Anne of Green Gables and directed like a handful of episodes, and they're like, all right, you get to be the Lupin guy, which obviously, you know, he did Castle of Cagliostro after the series.
Yeah, somebody saw a cut of a young European girl frolicking in a field, and they were like, this is the Lupin guy.
Yeah,
the horny monkey. Oh, this has got to be him.
I mean, were they wrong? Were they wrong, though?
They were not wrong.
It may look like a baffling decision right now to us, but we can't be there in their minds at that moment. They knew what they were doing.
It worked out 1,000%.
Thank you, Anne of Green Gables, for inventing Lupin.
Sherlock Hound,
and Cowboy Bebop. Basically, without Anne of Green Gables, the novel, we wouldn't have Lazarus the anime today.
There'd be no such thing as Naruto. So fucking give it up.
So this is about a little girl who's an orphan, which sucks. Her life sucks. And I guess her one character trait is that she's like very talkative and like she has a big imagination.
And red hair.
Yeah, and red hair, which she hates, by the way. This is something that I wanted to get into about the way this is being adapted.
Oh.
Because it's getting real weird with how it's viewing everything through a Japanese lens, to the point where it's like, it's kind of like, why'd you do that in a couple places? Specifically, like, in the first episode alone, Anne opines like two or three different times about how she hates her red hair and wishes that she had straight, like beautiful, long black hair, like the little Japanese child she used to know.
I feel you, girl. I feel you.
So I don't know if that is a true character trait to Anne in the novel. That she also was resentful of her red hair that made her stand out, but specifically they compare the hair that she wants to like a Japanese person's hair.
I do not remember that part. I do, yeah. You know, I read that book like as a very small child. I do remember her ruining the day she was born with red hair because it doesn't fit in with all the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Aryan children around
her.
Okay,
yes, that's basically what they were doing. She was opining that it wasn't, you know, elegant.
Yeah.
But in this case, instead of blonde, like, European ideal fantasy, it was, like, long, straight, black hair like a Japanese person's.
Yeah, which is a funny choice. That's a very funny choice.
Also, you know, I know it was a long time that you read it, but do you remember there being many sakura trees on Prince Edward Island in that in that story?
You know, I don't really recall mentions of any sakura trees, no. I don't think that came up.
Because there's quite a few. In fact, all over. In fact, the entire island. The entire island of Prince Edward is just covered end-to-end in sakura trees.
Hey, maybe that's true. Maybe that's true to life. I don't know. I've never been there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To their credit, though, the house, in fact, it did have Green Gables. They got that detail correct. I don't know. It's a very weird story where it begins.
Oh, you know what? Related to that, sorry, just as a side tangent. There is a while ago I talked about this manga, perhaps the only one outside of, I don't even know, that one Viking one that actually is set in Canada.
Vinland Saga?
Yeah, Vinland Saga, where they do the whole Viking thing in Greenland or whatever. Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm. Newfoundland.
But there was one I read about a guy who's bumming around, this Japanese guy who's bumming around in Canada. It's good. It's like a fun little mystery. But there is a part in the middle of it where all the Canadian women are like, Japanese men are the most handsome men in the world. And it's like, okay, all right, hold on. I'm not saying Japanese men are not handsome, but I don't think every Canadian woman is like has a Japanese guy fetish.
Yeah.
We need to like chill for a second. Anyway,
it's very much that tone in this adaptation.
Yeah.
Other than that, I am, you know, from what I've read, it's a pretty faithful, you know, beat by beat adaptation of the story. It just sounds like her life sucks. You know, she's an orphan and she gets sent to live with this like spinster brother and sister like duo who are elderly and don't have children of their own. And apparently back in the day, you could just like buy an orphan as a servant to live in your house.
Sure.
Because that's what they talk about. Yeah, we thought we were getting a boy from the orphan asylum. By the way, which is what they call it. They don't call it an orphanage. It is the orphan asylum. And they thought they were getting a boy. It turns out they got Anne. And most of the conflict of the first episode is centered around them trying to return her to the orphan asylum and get their money back.
I want a refund.
You know, obviously where they're going is she's just so spirited and endearing that they can't help but love her despite the fact that she's like a happy, outgoing child with lots of energy, which is the most egregiously offensive thing a girl could be in late Victorian like sensibilities. So I don't know. I don't get it. Orphans suck, man. I don't like thinking about them. So anyway, that is in my explanation of why being an orphan is a form of witchcraft. What did you watch?
Thank you for that riveting historical drama report.
Hey, it's like I've almost read the book.
It's really interesting to read about being a redhead. Anyway, I squeezed a couple more anime in. I wish I'd kind of hit more of my quota, but I did manage to get two in this time. The first one being something that I was very curious about. I watched Teogonia, which is just made up nonsense, as I found out. It doesn't mean
anything. That's not a real word. That's not a real word?
It's not a real word.
Oh, I'm so disappointed.
I'm not sure anybody even said it in the first episode, so I'm not sure what the context is.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. That's a pretty good word. Like, it rolls off the tongue.
Teogonia?
Yeah, it's got a certain elocution to it.
I think it's a riff on Patagonia.
Okay, sure, sure. But then where does the Teo come from, huh?
Mateo?
I think Teagonia sounds better than Patagonia.
I like Patagonia. It's got it's evocative.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Beautiful place, I assume.
So is it about hiking gear?
God, I wish. I really wish. Maybe like some kind of like technical wear, perhaps.
Yeah.
Fleece vests and whatnot.
A good fleece pullover.
No, it turns out I was very disappointed to learn. It turns out this is a secret isekai.
No.
Yeah.
I did not consent to this.
I thought this was going to be a fantasy show more in line with, you know, fantasy classics. But no. About 10 minutes in, the main character has a memory of modern Tokyo after opining for his desire to eat rice balls. A character comes up to him and he's like, what is rice ball? And he goes, oh, I don't know, something that sounds tasty. And then it just goes downhill from there.
Okay, so it's in Isekai where we get introduced to the characters in a cold open style, and then they backfill the Isekai part.
Well, it opens with our characters who are humans killing big monster men's, including pig men. You know, they call them orgs, so you kind of think they're riffing on orc, but it is just a big fat guy who has a pig on his head.
I think that that's kind of a Japanese fantasy staple thing, orcs in general being like pig people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the clear example would be what are their names? The pig guys from Zelda.
Zelda?
Of which Ganondorf is one.
Yes, Ganondorf, the pig man.
Yeah, those guys, I think in Dragon Quest and Dragon Warrior, the orcs were like pig-headed dudes. I think it's just one of those things that's just kind of been, you know, a Dragon Quest-like staple for a long time.
Yes. Well, the other animal beasts that we see in the first episode are just big apes. They're called macaques.
Oh, okay.
But they're not macaques.
But they're not like the little monkey macaques.
Yeah. They call them macaques, but they are not macaques. They are these massive gray gorillas.
So this is a fantasy world that inextricably has real world names of proper nouns, but they mean different things.
Yes. Also, our main character, he begins the story. He does not know he is an isekai person. He just has flashes of memories from a pre-isekai life.
Oh, I see. It's one of those.
Yes. So it's one of those. Basically, this guy is he's a foot soldier in a fantasy army who is slaying pig men and giant apes who are, you know, not subtle about that stuff. Unfortunately. The foreign animalistic invaders. It's really great fantasy trope. They just managed to jam right in the first episode there.
Yeesh.
Great. Fantastic. Some of these people are born with the ability to use fantastic magic powers, and some people are not. And as you could guess, our main character starts as one of the nots and becomes one of the haves. By the end of the episode.
All right. Off to a good start for this guy.
By the end of the episode, he can cast Fireball, and he fully torches the shit out of a pigman head. This is not good. This is a really bad one. I was really excited. This is a bad one. This is a really bad one. The animation was not very good at all. And even putting aside my disdain for those things I just said, the foreign hordes of animal men, secret backdoor isekai, the class-based system using magic as a stand-in for, you know, wealth and power. It's just a nonsensical first episode. There is very bad plotting. The pacing of the story beats, all that stuff is very clunky. It's not compelling. This is very poorly done on basically every front. I was really disappointed. And apparently this is also based on a light novel as well, which makes it even more baffling that the story is like just does not make any sense on a fundamental level.
Wow.
This sucks. This is a bad one.
Oh, no. I mean, did you know anything about this going into it?
I knew it was a fantasy.
Was that your deciding criteria on why you watch this one? Like, what made you pick it out?
Well, I thought it was a fantasy that wasn't an isekai. That's why I picked it out. And I immediately betrayed on that front.
Hate it when that happens.
Yeah. I'm just striking out all over the place here.
All right. Well, you know what? I think, as bad as that sounds, I think I may have watched something worse.
Oh, no. Worse than that?
Yes. I watched, and boy, do I hate this title because it says it all right up front. Can a boy-girl friendship survive? ? No, of course not.
Well, there goes the whole tension of the plot.
This is kind of the perfect distillation of that thing that we've talked about in anime rom-com before, where it is, in fact, like, not romantic and is kind of effeminate to like girls.
Yeah, being straight is super gay.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a rom-com setup where we have a central love triangle. We have our main dude who, to his credit, actually has somewhat of a personality, which is almost unheard of in shows of this type.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I don't want to give him too much credit, but like his thing is that he's really into botany, and then also, more importantly, his dream is that he wants to open up, like, he wants to be a jewelry maker where all of his jewelry is made from resin-preserved flowers.
Huh? What?
Yeah. That's, you know, our introduction to him is him hiding out at the school science room, sulking because he got in a fight with his parents who said, no, making plastic jewelry is not, like, a viable career choice. You need to pick something else.
Yeah, that's an Etsy shop side hustle, my dude. And you could do that now. That doesn't need to be a dream.
Well, he does do that, actually. He, to prove everyone wrong, he does open up essentially what's an Etsy shop to sell his handcrafted wares. That's his thing. That's kind of the central, I don't know, background framework of this story, because
his entire characteristic is this thing.
His entire character is that he wants to make jewelry out of resin preserved flowers.
What a weirdly specific way to limit yourself.
Yeah. And it's to the point where he's like, you know, obsessive about it. He will get into flow zones of making jewelry where people can essentially assault him in a myriad of ways, and he won't even notice. You know, he's just too engrossed in doing his thing.
Yes, in the ADHD world, we call this hyper-focus.
Yes, very much so. Enter the two female leads. One is the, I don't know what you want to call her, the spunky, manic pixie dream girl type, who in the first episode happens upon him sulking about this fight with his parents and instantly falls in love with him. So we've already thrown out the central premise of the title. They're not friends. They are in an unrequited love.
Unrequited?
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 Unrequited.
Unrequited?
Unrequited, so they're just, love.
They are not friends. They are, in fact, strangers who have crushes on each other.
Well, that's the thing. He does not have a crush on her. He very upfront tells her that, like, I'm flattered that you like me so much, but I've pledged to never fall in love until I meet this little girl that I was next door neighbors with, and I love her. I only love her. But she moved away to another school when we were fucking six. So obviously I have to hold on to these little child baby feelings of what I think might be romance.
Why did these anime boys pine for six-year-old girls? What's up with that?
Yay.
What's going on there?
We got to take a step back and maybe examine some of the root causes of these plot contrivances, right?
Yeah. There is a trend here. I'm noticing this is not an isolated incident. I want to know what's happening.
Uh-huh.
What is going on?
And wouldn't you know it, the new transfer girl, our tertiary character, the third angle of this love triangle, shows up, and it is heavily implied that she is the childhood friend that moved away when he was young. And so now you basically have these two girls vying for his romantic attention, and they're not friends at all. It's not a friendship. It's not a friendship. Of course it won't survive because it was never there to begin with.
Weird.
This was bad. I really hated this. I hated all the characters. I hated the way this dude very obviously likes the attention, even though he keeps like repeating to the audience like over and over throughout the episode, like, yeah, I'm just not into like girls or whatever. I just want to make my flowers. But it's pretty cool. Like, if I was the kind of guy that was into that, it would be pretty awesome to have these two hot girls fighting over me all the time.
If I liked it, it would be cool.
Yeah.
But I don't. So it's not.
No, it's if I liked it, it would be sexist, but I don't, so it's not.
Oh my god! So how about the jewelry? Is it cool?
Yeah, it's fucking Etsy tier. Like
it's Etsy tier.
Imagine a daisy dipped in resin and then put on a basic ass like stainless steel chain. That's what he's selling.
He's mostly doing pendants.
Pendants, bracelets, anklets, some rings here and there.
And does he wear them himself?
No. He's a boy. He doesn't wear jewelry. I feel like they go out of their way to make it a point with his character that even though it's his life's passion to make jewelry for women, that's a super manly and like cool thing for him to do. It's definitely not gay.
It would be gay if he wore them.
Yes, basically.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So
there's so much psychology going on.
So you have the manic pixie dream girl who basically thinks that she's the only one who understands the true beauty. That's another thing. Specifically, her crush feelings towards this guy centered a lot around that, like, quote unquote, purity that Japanese romance often upholds that is basically akin to, like, asexuality, right? The only reason she likes him so much is because he's not like a guy who thinks about girls that way.
Yeah, he's a Corey.
Yeah. Yes. This is the Corey hotline.
Yeah.
And then you have the other girl, the lost childhood friend, and her whole thing is that she's been buying this jewelry off of his Etsy shop, not knowing that it's him making it. And she's in love with the artist based solely off of his creations, but knows nothing of the person who is making them.
This is all deeply loser behavior, like all around.
Yeah. They're losers. They're all losers.
They're all losers.
So that's that. Can a boy and girl friendship survive? No, of course not. No, why did I get my hope up at all?
I mean, isn't this basically like, sort? I mean, it's a little tangential, but like this is kind of what losing heroines was exploring, kind of like in this way.
Kinda.
You know, he's kind of the friend. I mean, he's more positioned as just the rebound for all those girls, but like,
well, the losing heroines guy, his specific thing is that he likes to watch.
Yeah, he is a voyeur in the giallo sense.
He doesn't want to be involved. He just likes to see how drama unfolds from the sidelines.
Yeah.
That's his thing, and that's, you know, that makes him a very specific type of creep, different from from this guy. Who, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but he's a creep too. He's definitely a creep.
He's definitely a creep. I mean, that's for sure.
I think it's partially his whole line is because she is like very upfront with her, the manic pixie dream girl. She's doing the whole like, hey, if we're unmarried when we're 30, we have to marry each other. Wink, wink. Isn't it great that I'm the only girl that ever gets to hang out with you? I don't want you to hang out with other girls because I'm in love with you and I want to date you. And I think we should date and I want you to be my boyfriend. Yeah. And he's like, haha, you're so funny. But you know that I pledged to only ever fall in love with my childhood friend who moved away when I was 6. So you should stop kidding like that.
You know, the let's get married at 30 thing is so funny because, like, you know, that's a Seinfeld thing, except they are already in their 30s. And it's like, they just say like, when we're 60, why don't we just, if we're still single, why don't we just get married? It's very funny for like a 12-year-old or whatever. They're 16, probably.
Yeah, they're second year high schoolers. So yeah, 16, 17.
Yeah, it's very funny for 16-year-olds to be like, well, if we're still 16 at the ripe old age of 30, why don't we just fuck each other?
Well, you know, this is coming from the country where Christmas cake is a thing.
Christmas cake. Good old Christmas cake.
Got to bring that one back up.
Yeah. Somehow, I don't know. I have nothing to base this on. But if they had reorganized their culture around Halloween cake, I think they would be in a much better psychologically healthy position.
Halloween is viewed as a form of Western imperialism over there. Come on.
How did they get that so backwards? Really fucked that one up.
Well, you see, Santa's got a bright red suit. That's really it. He's just more marketable.
Damn it. Damn it.
So, yeah, that one sucked. That was bad. It was a bad show.
That sounds bad.
And I think, you know, corollary to yours, the animation was actually really good. I keep finding this happens over and over again, is that these weird, like, nothing rom-com shows get the most overproduced, like, animation budgets, and then the stuff that's supposed to be, like, fantasy and action-based has all of the, like, scenes cut down to slideshows for the most part.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Kind of weird.
That's also the Losing Heroines thing, was like, god damn, that show looked really good. Why does it have to be such slop?
Yeah.
What is happening?
What is happening, folks? I don't know. Do you please tell me you have something that had some merit that you watched this week?
unfortunately, I watched something. It's not something good, but I did watch something.
Okay. All right.
In the effort to really cover everything this season, out of journalistic integrity, I went ahead and watched an anime that's based on a gacha game.
Hey,
what do you know? It came back around. This one is called #Compass 2.0:Animation Project. Because this is an animation project based on #Compass, the gacha game by TMS Entertainment. This is not a gacha game that is available in English, I think. So that kind of explains my initial confusion. Because I did not know this was a gacha game until the anime started, and it was very obviously a gacha game.
Let me guess, there was a variety of types of girl, and they're all wearing some form of either revealing outfit or, like, vaguely risque Victorian hoop dresses?
You know what? Not really, actually. That's not what clued me in, though there is a little bit of that, but it's a little different.
Okay.
It's a mobile game, right? And it's a 3v3 mobile, sort of MOBA-like hero fighter game.
Okay.
Which looks very bad. Maybe that goes without saying, but the actual game itself looks very bad.
Oh.
You know, and again, maybe this is my bias. I'm a Dota guy. I look at other MOBAs with, like, sneering disdain. As clearly inferior in every way, but you know.
To be fair, I never once got an eye for, like, the Dota visual landscape when I was playing. It was just all meaningless lights and chaos to me every time a fight broke out. I had no idea what the fuck was going on.
It's very straightforward. I don't understand what the problem was, but this one is this one's also fairly straightforward. It just doesn't seem fun. It's a 3v3 game. It's sort of like a MOBA, but there is a capture the flag element, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're running around, you're attacking each other, and you're defending points on a map. And when the anime starts, it starts with, like, these kind of, like, obvious, like, hero avatar characters running around with little chibi mascots following them.
Uh-huh.
And they're playing this game. The game looks terrible in the anime, too. Maybe even worse than what the actual game looks like. It just reads as nonsense. Just complete nonsense. But I go, like, okay, great. This is, like, you know, people log in. They play as these guys. They have little AI companions that follow them around. Nope. It's not true. The guys, the characters, are AI. Those are the video game characters. The little chibi mascot guys are the humans. They don't play the game. They just follow the video game people. I don't understand. And again, I don't know if that's what the game is actually like. Maybe this is some kind of auto battler. It doesn't seem like that to me. But in the anime, it's made very clear that The players, the human players, are not playing the game.
They're not playing the game. They are
not playing the game.
They're the guys in the game being played.
They're the little anime mascot characters that hang around the heroes, the AI heroes.
I see.
You do? Because I don't. What the fuck?
No, it's an absolutely baffling decision, and it's weird, but I guess it's... I don't know how this game works if it's like if when you're playing the game itself, does it position you as you are one of these characters controlling the game? Or are these just characters that hang out, like, on the side of the screen while you play? Because if that's the case, then that tracks consistently, I suppose.
So, I have not played the game. I have only very cursorily looked at what the game is like. I don't know what the fuck the deal is. But in the anime, this is the way it's positioned, right? There is a sort of, digital world which is occupied by heroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the heroes are digital people. They're not humans. They're simulated people who have armor and terribly goofy-looking sci-fi weaponry. They just wander around. They just live here and wander around. We are introduced to one of them whose name is 13, who is a rebellious one, who has not taken a human as an ally or companion or whatever.
Now, I have to ask the hard question, because I'm looking at screenshots of this animation, and is 13 the one in blackface?
Yes. Yes, he is.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
Yeah. He doesn't open his mouth, by the way. He moves his lips, but his teeth never separate, which I thought was just a very strange detail. Just on top of everything else.
He's doing that, like, anime smart guy grin thing that they do. Where they talk through their teeth. He's just doing that all the time.
He never opens his mouth. It's very strange. Or I guess he never unhinges his jaw, I guess. I don't know how to describe it.
He's an anti-snake.
But he talks without his teeth separating. Just a very strange detail. Just very strange.
Okay.
But he is a little rebel on the server where he lives, because he refuses to take a human being as his companion.
Uh-huh.
So he's just like a little troublemaker. But it does imply that these AI guys have their own wills and their own lives independent of the game. Because he just hangs out. He doesn't want to game. He doesn't want to battle. He just wants to chill.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get it, I guess. But, it's a little bit of a what was I made for scenario here. Like, aren't you like a battle guy? Is that your entire purpose in life? But he disagrees.
You know what? I agree with that. You shouldn't be beholden to what some gotcha game programmer designed you to be. Chill if you want. It's better. It's better than doing stuff, especially if that stuff is gotcha gaming.
I think so. But it does have a very weird implication on all the other heroes who have chosen to fight and die at the behest of humans who are just trying to play games in class underneath their desk so they don't have to pay attention to history or whatever.
All those poor Advance Wars soldiers died for nothing.
Yeah, it's awful. So he's sitting around the sidelines just watching all of his like fellow anime guys rush into meaningless capture the point 3-on-3 battles, murdering each other just viciously with these horrible weapons. So, very strange right off the bat. The first episode does introduce the concept of bugs. So, like, bugs assault the server, but you can't actually defend the server because you can't use your weapon unless you're paired up with a human. So the AI moderator tricks the 13 character, the rebellious AI guy, into temporarily taking a human companion who is just apparently when you log into the game, you just kind of float around until the AI pairs you with somebody.
Okay.
It sounds like a really boring game and hard to like get into if you just have to be like, well, I'm just waiting around until I get assigned a dude. But he gets tricked into taking this human, and he's obviously, like, even though he's a pacifist, he's, like, the best one, and he single-handedly beats back all the bugs, whereas all of his AI friends just get their asses kicked in super embarrassing ways. And then the moderator's like, hey, I tricked you into taking that human companion, and now it's permanent. Now you have to play the battle game, and he's pissed.
Now, do the humans have, like, a physical game form that these characters are interacting with, or are they just disembodied?
Yes, they are the little chibi anime mascot characters that float around next to the heroes.
Okay. I see.
It's super weird.
This is bizarre.
Yeah.
They look like Metabots.
Yeah, all the designs just really suck. They're all really ugly. The stages for the battles are really ugly, and they don't, like, geographically make sense. The use of 3D for a bunch of the stuff is just terrible. Obviously, this plot is fucking awful. Everything about this really sucks. And even as an ad for the game, it's really bad. This game looks like dog shit.
So you're not going to be pulling for this one. You are going to stick with Weathering Waves to get those waifus.
Oh, no, I'm already 100 hours in. I just don't like it.
All right. Well, I can at least round it out with something that sounds better than that on paper.
Okay.
I still don't think I enjoyed it, but man, it's not a gacha game, so it has that going for it.
It's crazy that all of these shows suck and this is still better than last season.
I know.
It's amazing. What is happening?
I feel like I'm eating good compared to last season. Last season was a barren wasteland.
Yeah, did Jujutsu Kaisen legitimately kill all the animators? Like, did it?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that what happened?
I think Studio MAPPA literally went around shooting people in the back of the head with those cow air guns that they use for at a slaughterhouse after they finished animating each scene.
Like we were talking about Uma Musume, whenever an animator would get a hand cramp, they would just plug yeah. it in the back of the head.
Well, gotta put this one out to pasture.
Yeah. It's just weird, right? It's weird.
It's weird, yeah.
It's weird.
I guess I didn't mention that for Anne Shirley. The animation was good. I did mention it for kind of Boy and Girl Friendship Survive. Both those shows look good, which was surprising.
Wow.
I just wish they had more substance. Compared to
and
this...
both of mine looked bad.
Yeah. Well, compared to mine, wow. This one that I'm about to talk about, which also had no substance and looked bad. I watched The Dinner Table Detective, again, keeping in the theme of Season of the Witch. This is about a detective witch. Detective work is witchcraft.
And he tries to figure out who spit in his food.
So this is actually more of a, we don't know what kind of eccentric detective character we want to have be the main character of this show. So we're just going to do a bunch of them and have them all kind of like jumbled together. So, you know, bear with me in here and see if this makes sense to you. Cause we actually have three detectives in this show, three main character detectives. We have one, the girl detective who is, secretly the heiress of basically the Samsung family or whatever, you know,
sure.
The Sony heiress. And she has a secret identity as a decorated police detective, and never the two identities shall meet. That's her character, rich girl who is also a detective. You see, being a decorated police detective is below her rich girl status in life, and her parents would never approve of her doing such a peasant job, you see.
Detective is a peasant job?
According to her. According to the multi-generational wealthy family of the Hojo dynasty, of which she is one.
Okay.
Her parents would never approve of her being a cop, let alone a detective.
I guess I just always assumed sort of the hobbyist detective is a popular pastime of the idle rich.
Well, no, that's the thing, is she's getting a paycheck for being a detective.
Oh, she's taking it as a job. Okay, yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, no.
Yes, okay, I get it. I agree with her parents now.
And then we throw in detective number two, who is her, like, eccentric, flamboyant, loudmouth partner detective. And his thing is that he's kind of like a dandy prince type, where he's, you know, always using, according to her, glamorous foreign words in his speech, like arrivederci and capiche and au revoir.
Wow, I hate that.
Yeah. And his thing is that he's, like, actually really bad at being a detective. but he's really good at like interrogating people. He's good at torture. He's a torture guy. He's good at torturing criminals to make them give confessions, which are, according to him, always true. And he wears like a white suit and a white leather trilby hat. And he's
naturally,
you know, trying to present himself as a dandy playboy type.
What a cool guy.
The two of them together make up what is essentially a manzai act, with her being like the straight-laced, good detective, albeit one who is trying to hide her rich girl identity, and him being the kind of loudmouth, goofy guy who's always accusing the wrong person, but has quote-unquote people skills.
So he's a bad detective, but he is a slick talker.
Yeah, basically. Okay. That is his character.
Sure. Yeah.
And most of the first episode is set up to kind of introduce us to them as a working duo. Wouldn't you know it, the episode starts off with her at a rich guy birthday party, business associate of her rich guy dad, and she's in her rich girl persona when one of the other rich girls there gets moitered, bashed over the head in the greenhouse with a vase. Very Cluedo.
Cool.
The police are on their way there, and she has to quickly rush to find a bathroom to Batman change into her detective clothes, where the other rich people would not recognize her as, because she wears glasses when she's at work.
Oh shit.
Instead of having her hair down and wearing dresses, she wears a suit and glasses, and this is the perfect disguise.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. And so her partner shows up with the police squad, and now her job is to try and interrogate all of her rich girl friends to see which one of them was the moiterer, because in her dying breath, the murdered girl said that it was a woman wearing a red dress, wearing a necklace with a green jewel.
That's a lot of clues for a dying
person. Yeah, it's a lot of clues. I'm not going to paraphrase too much more, but through the course of trying to solve this mystery, she is given like breadcrumb clues leading her along to different suspects and their alibis from a mysterious third party. And then at the end of the episode, we are revealed that this mysterious third party is, in fact, the third detective in this show, which is the Jeeves style butler that her rich family has assigned to her, who is in his like spare time a Sherlock Holmes. Like, that's his thing. He is a Sherlock Holmes genius man who is a butler for a job, but also he has a side business where he solves mysteries, and now his whole character is like, he stands in the background basically saying like, hey, I already solved this mystery, can you not be so stupid, it's taking you a really long time to figure this out.
That's kind of rude.
Yeah. And so those are our three detectives, our Naru Sasukura of wacky detectives, right?
Okay.
And they solve murders, and basically it's the rich girl and the playboy, being bad, or just barely, making sense of clues. And then her butler in the background is just saying like, hey, do you want a hint? It looks like you're having trouble with that. I've already figured this out because I'm such a Sherlock Holmes genius man.
Well, why is he not just turning the murderer in? Isn't this like an actual murder?
Well, he's not getting paid. He just does it for fun. Yeah, he doesn't solve the crimes. He just figures them out. He's not a heroic Sherlock Holmes type. What's Mycroft, Sherlock's brother? He's more like that.
Mycroft Holmes.
Yeah.
Well, Mycroft was a finance guy.
Yeah. Imagine if Jeeves and Wooster was also a crime drama.
Sure. And Jeeves was honor bound to let Wooster solve the crime first to not feel like an idiot.
Yeah, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't like this. This kind of sucked.
You know what? This actually sounds a lot like a PlayStation game I played once called Process of Elimination, which was a game where like a murder takes place and the Guild of Detectives summons all the detectives to this mansion where the crime has happened. And there's one like kind of the Destiny Child mystery girl who with the silver hair and everything is like, hey, just to let you know, main character, I've pretty much already solved the crime, but I want to see how you do against all the other detectives. So it's like you and like 13 other bumbling assholes getting condescended to by this one chick while an actual murderer runs around. It's kind of a cool game, but what an insulting premise.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I kind of sympathize with him because ACAB, and she is a cop by choice. She is a rich girl who never has to work, and instead of not working or doing something useful with her wealth, she decided to be a cop on purpose for the fun of it. So that kind of sucks. I don't like her.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Nor do I like the slick talker guy who is a bad cop but is like really good at lying, and so that's why he gets to be a detective. I think that sucks.
They all suck.
Yeah. Well, again, the evil Jeeves amongst them is the most sympathetic character. So I guess I would have to side with him just by default if I had to pick one.
Sure, but also he is just letting a murderer run around so that he can condescend to his boss.
Well, to be fair, that is very Holmesian in nature. Like, how many stories involves Sherlock Holmes basically saying like, yeah, I already had this pegged from the beginning, but I wanted to see how you figured it out, Watson.
Okay, but that happens, you know, near the end of the case when he's basically already wrapping things up. He will turn to Watson and be like, well, I just found this final clue. What do you think it means? And then Watson will blunder his way to the actual answer.
And he'll be like, no, you idiot.
Yeah, Sherlock never solves the crime immediately and then makes Watson redo the entire thing. He does not do that. And he does not let the criminals escape except for in the very first story, A Study in Scarlet, where he very specifically does let the guy escape because he killed Mormons.
Yeah.
Which is not a crime.
Not a crime in England.
Not a crime in the UK to kill Mormons.
I do think that was the reason that from the Jeremy Brett adaptation series, they never did A Study in Scarlet, specifically because they're like, I don't think it looks good to have Mormons be portrayed as like murderous thugs, maybe.
Yeah.
They didn't want to get all political with that one.
I mean, what do they care? How many Mormons are in the UK anyway?
More now.
Yikes.
I don't know why it's called the Dinner Table Detective yet. They haven't explained that one. I assume it's because he's the butler and maybe like when he's bringing out dinner, he says, I solved the case, by the way. Did you?
Ugh.
Yeah. Those are my three, witch anime for this week. Season of the Witch, forms of witchcraft, orphans, guys who make jewelry, and detectives are all witches. I am excited to see what more witchery the anime season is bringing up for me next week.
Well, I guess it would be Meibashi witches. I don't mean to spoil it.
Ironically, I don't think that one's about witches. The witches are just a metaphor in that one.
What are they a metaphor? What do you think witches are a metaphor in the Shakespearean mode?
I think they're probably a metaphor for checking out our Instagram and giving us likes and subscribes. Doing all that stuff. Yeah, you like that? You like how I did that?
Check out TikTok. Do the blue sky. You can email us. What you think witches are metaphors for in the Shakespearean mode.
Email us at...
Personally, I think it's feminism.
AnimeDeathSpiral@gmail.com. We will answer. We literally have nothing better to do besides watch our email account and play idle clicker games. That's all. That's all we're doing.
And gotcha games.
When we're not
games.
Talking to you. Yeah, and gotcha games, of course. Can't forget those.
Just getting really into the gacha games. I find the anime women disgusting, but the mechanics themselves are so compelling.
All right, well, I've got to go do my weekly, get my polls in. Until next time, handsome, all tall, right. Beautiful listener.
Bye. Bye. Beatty was a weird guy.
Yeah, he was.